Good evening. It's great to have you, Pawan, person with your incredible accomplishments on our podcast titled The Brand Called You. And I think you are an amazing example of the brand called you. I mean, you know, you've built what an amazing story of your life. You've been in Dhun School, then you went up IIT, then you went to Stanford, then you went back and taught at Dhun School. I'm going to use the word fooled around with your dad's business because I refer to it a little more. And then became the founder of Daksh, which at one stage employed close to 40,000 people. When IBM acquired it, you sold the company and then continued as CEO of IBM Daksh and then decided to move on. And now you're in a very exciting phase of your life with Uber.
Right.
So let's start our discussion talking about a little bit about your school, about family, and then talk about some experiences at IIT, Delhi, Stanford, and then we'll come to what made you start Daksh.
Okay, so I come from a middle class family. My dad was an engineer, and using his tikka money at his wedding, he started a business making emergency lights. So he always wanted to be an entrepreneur, so he left a job in escorts and started this business. My mother has been a teacher all her life, and so that's the kind of house I grew up in. Very little money, because when you're running your own business, as dad was, everything was getting invested there. Difficult times, used to work extremely hard. But we never felt the lack of any money because the needs were low. Right? So that's the environment in which I grew up. I was a naughty kid, very poor in academics, and somewhere along the way, I think my mother decided that this boy needs to go to a boarding school to get a more structured education, and probably that influence would be good. My father did not want me to leave the house, and so my mother prevailed because her siblings had gone to Dhun, and that's how I landed up taking the exam for Dhun. There were many a broken ruler, as my mother taught me at home, because I was very stubborn. But I think that is what was in one's destiny. And I had the good fortune of getting in. So that's how Dhun happened.
For and me. Is that how you became a believer in the boarding school system? Which is why you sent both your sons there?
So actually, initially, I had a fairly rough ride in Dhun. I was a very poor student. I would be getting, you know, 50%, 60%. I was not terribly good in sports. So that's how the Dhun journey began. And I think in life, sometimes you come across adversity and it transforms you in a positive way. And what happened in Dhun was that in about grade 8, my chemistry teacher at that time accused me of stealing his book. And you're all alone because you're in a boarding school, your parents aren't there, and I hadn't done it. So I said, how do I prove to him that I haven't done so? And so I started working hard. The logic was, if I do well, I'm a good student, maybe he will believe in me. And that started this slow upward spiral, because once you start doing better, you don't want to go back and you begin to believe in yourself. So that's really what happened. And I landed up doing well in my class 10 exam. And from there on, I topped Dhun in science. And so that was my journey in Dhun. And I think it is through going through this adversity and seeing how much it added to me in terms of character that I became a believer. So I wouldn't say I was kind of a convert when I started, but through that experience.
And then what made you select IIT? And a lot of people go to IIT and then they go away to America. You went to Stanford and then you came back to teach.
So the reason I picked IIT was because I was good in science. And in both my father's side and mother's side of the family, if you were an engineer, you went to IIT or Roorkee in his era, because those are the best places. So I didn't know any better, so I prepared for it. If I'd looked at the stats of number of boys from Dhun who make it to IIT, I probably would have been a little more circumspect. And I think it was just good fortune. I did make it into IIT and I went to Kharagpur, which is, you know, completely in the boondocks, you know, town where the only identity was it had the longest platform. And again, being away from the city, I think nurtured me and groomed me in very interesting ways.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was the complete underdog and extremely bright people. I worked very hard and again topped my department. But because of sheer hard work, I wouldn't say I was the most intelligent person there. And I think that has slowly become kind of a theme, that if you can put in a lot of hard work and be open to learning from others, you can probably do well in your life. The reason I went to the US is because I specialized in a field called energy engineering and largely focused on solar. But at that time, oil was very cheap. So there really wasn't a solar business. And in IIT, when you don't know what to do, you get a scholarship, you go abroad and you study some more. And so that's exactly what happened. We couldn't afford it, but the US universities were kind enough to fund our education. So I went as a teaching assistant to Stanford and did my master's over there. The reason to come back was because specifically my mother had pretty much brainwashed me that don't be like these Indian boys who and girls who study in IIT, the government spends so much money funding your education, and then you just get exported and the brain gets drained. So I was probably scared to be on her wrong side, so I never really thought about staying in the US and came back. And I've always wanted to teach. When I was in my final years in Doom as a student, I was helping younger students in math and science. And I felt this was a nice way to transition from the US back to India. So I went back to Doom and I started teaching and took over from my physics teacher, who was the head of the department at that time. And I will say that probably my happiest years ever were when I was teaching in Doom.
How many years were you at Doom?
I was just a little over a year.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I think teaching in a boarding school is not restricted just to the classroom.
Correct.
You're teaching in the class. You're going out for hikes in the mountains. You're playing soccer and hockey with the same kids. So if you scold them in class and he trips you on the playing field, you know what? That's part of life. Correct. Just take it.
Correct.
And I just think it was fascinating because we're able to groom youngsters. And in many ways, they open up more to you than even their parents because you have such a profound impact on them. And that is something which I have then weaved into my corporate career in many ways.
Correct. After you finished Doom and before you started Dutch, what did you do in those years?
I'm the only son, and as I said, my father is an entrepreneur. Probably the most entrepreneurial person I've ever seen. This year he turns 18. And as we speak, he's in the process of starting another joint venture company.
Incredible.
Right? So there's just a tremendous amount for me to learn. And so when I was at Doom, he said that now that you're finished with your, you know, stint and you've kind of experimented, it's time you came and joined me in business.
Okay.
And so that's what happened. I came and I joined my dad in his business.
Okay.
Which was in the electronic, in the components business.
And how many years were you there?
So I spent a couple of years working with him in two different stints. So first I spent probably about a year and a half with him. He's been a person who's been very generous and allowed me to chase my dream. And I really did not know what I wanted to do. I wasn't quite enjoying it. And so I decided to then go and join a company called Forbes Marshall, which was in Pune. And the connection was that Naushad Forbes was a visiting faculty at Stanford, right? So I felt that he had a couple of people from Stanford over there. And I felt this is an engineering company. I'll be able to use some of my engineering skills in an environment where I'll probably enjoy myself. So I was in Pune for about a year and a half. And very enjoyable, but I wasn't doing core engineering. I graduated doing technical training across their 7 different companies. And probably in all this, there was a theme for me to recognize that whether it is developing people or teaching is something that comes naturally to me.
And then how did Dutch happen?
So after Forbes Marshall, I came back and joined my dad's business back again. And we had a business which was into offshore data entry. So all these, if you look at, you know, lawyers, chambers, they have a lot of these books which have case law. And when the CD-ROM got created, all that information was being put on CD-ROMs. So someone had to key them in. And so that work used to be sent to India. And we were one of the companies that was coding that work. Now, as that business began to plateau, we were looking for growth opportunities. So I met a colleague of mine from Stanford called Ashish Gupta. So Ashish was doing his PhD when I was doing my master's. And we were good friends. And I said, you know, Ashish, I want to grow this business. And that's how the thought about doing something like Dutch came about. Not quite then. I was trying to get Ashish's help to get customers in the US. And meanwhile, Ashish had joined Amazon by selling Jungly to Amazon. So a couple of months later, when someone from Amazon was coming to India, Ashish said, why don't you and Sanjeev was Ashish's brother-in-law, why don't you two guys meet this lady, show her around? And we did. And we told that lady that we would love to become employees of Amazon, because Amazon was the rock star company in 1999, which was the height of the dot-com boom. And once she went back, Ashish told us, you should start your own company and we guys can help direct business to you. Not from Amazon, but because Jungly was so well known in Silicon Valley. And so that's what we did. And that's how the whole idea of Daksh was born.
Tell us about your journey in Daksh, how you built it from an idea into such a major company.
So the thinking started in 1999. And what was happening was that the internet was booming rapidly. And at that point in time, the thought was that if you're not an internet company, you're going to die. Mm. So if you have these unfashionable brick and mortar stores, it's not going to survive. And everything should have a .com associated with it, whatever that implies. So we started this company called Daksh.com. Right? That's what the name was. Mm-hmm. And the idea was to go to all these internet companies, which are scaling rapidly. Mm-hmm. And do not have time to focus on customer service. And to use all these youngsters who are graduating out of colleges in India who don't have jobs and match these two. Now, it was an interesting idea, but we didn't know how to do any of this. Mm-hmm. So we ordered 3 books from Amazon on how to build an internet call center and copied generously from there and created a business plan. And we needed someone to fund us because we were middle-class folks. Yeah. We had no money. And we are very fortunate because Ashish funded us as an angel investor, and then CDC, which was a venture fund, put in the balance about $2 million. That's how Daksh kind of came to life.
Wow.
Our first customer was a very small company called Big Step, which allowed small companies and entrepreneurs to set up websites.
Okay.
So we started with them, and very soon Amazon came and they started looking at outsourcing some of their own work. And so we made a pitch. It took us 3 months to answer the Amazon RFP. Later on, something we would do in 3 days. And we made a wholehearted pitch. And the Amazon team was very impressed. And they finally did land up giving us the business. And once the deal was all signed, and we knew that this is not going to disappear, we asked them, why did you give us the business? And so they said, you know, you were a wonderful team. And so, of course, we were very excited.
Yeah.
And they said, it was so clear from the response that you knew nothing about running this kind of a business. So we were, of course, very deflated. And they said, hang on, we wanted such a team who we could teach the Amazon way of how to do customer service.
Okay.
Right? We did not want our customers to be put through a standardized process. We know how to run customer service, and we are looking for the right team to partner with us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how Amazon happened. And I think that was a material transition point for us, on the back of which we built the company.
And what were some of the key challenges that you faced when you were scaling up Daksh?
One is, I think the mistake that we made as we were scaling up is we did not hire senior level talent or sufficient amount of it, because we come from a scarcity mindset. When you're in the middle class in India, resources are not available. So even when someone gave us money, we wanted to conserve it. Right? So like a strength becomes your weakness. So it allowed us to scale the company in a frugal fashion, but we did not invest in probably enough senior leaders. And leaders from big companies like GE anyway did not want to join us because we are not much of a brand. So we built the company on first principles.
Okay.
I think the positive of it was that we built a very, very strong culture, which even today is recognized. And if you find someone who's worked in Daksh, people will immediately associate a certain entrepreneurialness and ownership mindset, great transparency and integrity, which is, I guess, the middle class way on which we built it.
And then at some stage, you took a decision to sell Daksh to IBM. What were the reasons behind that decision?
So Daksh was never built to be a company to be sold. It was built to be a company which would become an iconic company where people love to work. our customers love to partner with us, mm-hmm. and we do something for the community in which we operate. But it was also, for most of us, our very first company we were building. So it was very scary, mm-hmm. because we felt that the careers of a lot of the people who trusted us mm-hmm. were in our hands.
Correct.
Our biggest customer in Daksh landed up being Sprint, which is a telecom company in the US. Mm-hmm. Right. Over a period of time, it represented 50% of our revenue mm-hmm. and even higher percentage of our profits in the company.
Right.
And somewhere in that journey, Sprint decided that they're going to exit from Daksh because India was not working out as a destination for them.
Okay. Right. For business?
Because, yes, because the American customers associated themselves more with other geographies like Philippines right. than in India.
Right.
So although we had a Philippines footprint, we had not transitioned Sprint to that location. And frankly, that burden that someone who's a disproportionate part of your revenue and profit is now going to go away, and you have this burden of 6,000 people that you support, made us start looking at opportunities. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it just so happened coincidentally that IBM came knocking, because when they would go and talk to customers, our customers in the US, they would say, we are having an amazing experience working with this company. And as you look at broadening into services, you may want to consider talking to them. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes two and two just come together, and that's what happened.
Okay.
And as I like to joke, if you're going to get married, you might as well get married into the royal family.
Right.
That's what we did.
Okay.
By selecting IBM. And I will say that it made a phenomenal impact on the careers and long-term careers of many people who were part of the Daksh team. So in that regard, I think it was a very appropriate decision.
So what did the IBM acquisition do to you personally?
I think it was a natural maturing process for me, because what happened was Sanjeev used to work in Motorola, and prior to that in digital and compact. So he had already come from a big company and he did not want to continue being in a big company. Mm-hmm. But I had come from my family business, right? And I had no experience. So Sanjeev decided that he will leave and he will start a venture fund called Helion. Mm-hmm. And then I took over from Sanjeev as the CEO of this business. And I think to run an entrepreneurial company, because at the time we got acquired, we were 6,000 people. By the time I left IBM, we were 41,000 people. And this entrepreneurial environment within the umbrella of IBM, I think was amazing, because I learned how to fight the system mm-hmm. and not have them push me. Mm-hmm. I learned how to learn from them, because many things that they were doing that we resisted, we realized were the right things to do for business. And IBM had just had such maturity of talent. This was one acquisition where they broke all the rules and they finally wrote a case study on the Daksh acquisition and how much IBM learned from it. So I think it was just a humbling experience in both directions.
And how did you handle the big bureaucracy of IBM? Or there wasn't any?
No, certainly there was. But I realized that, and this is where I think IBM's foresight was there. Mm-hmm. Over a period of time, IBM selected me to be part of their global leadership team, mm-hmm. which is at that time was called the Integration and Values team mm-hmm. of 300 people worldwide. And once you are in operating in these circles, you are able to get things done outside of the bureaucracy.
Okay.
Because now it is the network of senior leaders. Mm-hmm. Right. And I found that incredibly useful, because I would be able to get my point across and in many cases also understand what is the global point of view and why we had to follow some things. And I think then it was a very, very unique partnership and a lot of learning. Mm-hmm. But if you were stuck in the middle somewhere, then of course the system can overwhelm you.
Right. So, you know, you've obviously been an entrepreneur at heart,
right.
moved into IBM. Then why did you walk away from such a comfortable job, high profile in this country, and go and join Netflix?
So I had, within IBM, got to a stage where they said you should fully integrate the Daksh business into IBM. So it was probably their longest surviving standalone business within IBM. And roughly in the sixth year, they said, please integrate it. And it was a one-way street, because once you integrate a business, then you cannot extract it back again. So the job opportunities for me were I could run India as a geography, certainly a very large role and meaningful role, or I could go to corporate and do something there. I did not want to relocate out of India, and become a nomad with a large multinational.
Correct.
At least at that stage in my life. And I found that in running India, there were so many verticals which I had to integrate that it was more of a gatekeeper kind of a role than truly a P&L role the way I would have envisaged.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow the fire in me was slowing down and dying. And I realized that it is my problem. It is not an IBM problem because large companies have to operate in this fashion.
Correct.
And among the large companies, I had the privilege of being in among the best. So it was a realization that I need to do something different. I need a different canvas. And for 11 years, I had been living and breathing Dutch and then IBM Dutch. So I decided to take a clean break. And I had a six-month transition in IBM, which was unusual for someone at that seniority. And I took a break. I did not have a job in hand. And then as I started thinking of doing something different, that's when United Lex came calling. Because they wanted to build the preeminent company in legal services globally.
And then what about United Lex? You know, you spent 5 years there. I know that you used to travel 15 days a month to the US.
Right.
For a lot of our listeners and viewers, that would be like a dream. But you know, after you've done your 10th flight, you just are scared to get onto another plane. And right. You know, so how was it like 15 days in America, 15 days in India, month after month you did it for 4 or 5 years?
I think for the initial few years, the inertia and the excitement kind of takes over. And here was a case of building a company in legal services and taking the number one mantle of once again being the company which is loved by your employees, loved by your customers, and you're doing something for the communities in which you operate. So the fundamental principle did not change. I had never done legal. I would have never thought in my life that I would be surrounded by lawyers, but that's what happened. And I initially found it very invigorating and enjoyable. But after a while, I realized that I wasn't connecting with the business at the depth at which I wanted to. And for me, purpose in what I do is very, very important. So lowering someone else's legal costs was exciting up to a point. But frankly, what really got me excited in the initial few years was that I was shaping a company and I was shaping people. People who never thought that they could do roles of a certain size, I was able to get them to perform at that level. So I would say probably roughly in my fourth year at United Lex, I felt that the value that I could add had become somewhat incremental. And I then started thinking about what's the best opportunity for me. The actual change happened after 6 years, but that's really what the mindset was. Traveling 15 days a month is certainly hard because when you have younger children, you want to be there for them. And you have to have a very supporting spouse, which I did. And so I think that's how it worked out.
I've often wondered, you have had an amazing entrepreneurial career, yet you are incredibly modest and you're an amazing people manager. Somehow, I'd love to understand what makes this tick within the same individual. An entrepreneur who's built a fabulous business but who's not brash. Someone who's made so many careers and yet someone who's looked up to as a great people manager. Talk to me a little bit about your people philosophies.
Actually, I don't see myself as an entrepreneur because I have a benchmark, which is my father. And compared to him, I am completely risk averse. He is a role model for me in just how entrepreneurial he is.
Correct.
I think it is a mix of being entrepreneurial but not an entrepreneur. Right? So I do well in teams or I do well within an organization which wants to leverage my entrepreneurial capability. So in Dutch, it was the case of the team. In Uber, it is the case of a company which is leveraging entrepreneurial capability. I have just a very, very deep desire to groom people and to learn from them. And it is a two-way street. It probably came from my teaching stint in Doon.
Mm-hmm.
And even when I was at Stanford, actually, I was a teaching assistant, so I learned there too. And the biggest reward that I can get is not money, but it is when people come and say, Pawan, you had a significant impact on my career, or I worked for you at this time, at this stage, you don't quite know it.
Mm-hmm.
Or one of my students comes to me and says, you know, so that to me counts for a lot.
Okay.
And to make people achieve their own potential is a big high for me. So I think that's probably what has driven me to be the way I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love doing it.
And then, you know, after United Lex, you had to choose from. One is become an entrepreneur again or go and work for another big company. And you chose to join Uber right at the top. What made you take this decision of moving away from being an entrepreneur to becoming a professional manager?
I think I reached a point where I wanted to make outsized impact, number one. Second, I wanted to get out of my comfort zone. So I had been in services. Dutch has been services, United Lex has been services. But I think the future is of businesses which are using internet as a platform, you are using technology. And I felt I was over the hill, although I'm still not anywhere close to, you know, where my dad is. And so I wanted to be in a company which is young, leverages technology, very highly skilled people, and where I can help them realize their potential and where it becomes complementary. So what I identified was many of these tech-oriented companies which are leveraging the internet in India. And as I looked at many of them and finally came to a short list of two, Uber is the one that I picked because I felt that there's a lot for me to learn and be a student again. And at the same time, contribute based on my experiences and make all these youngsters succeed. So on their shoulders, Uber as a company and mobility as a business actually can grow and make a profound impact on countries like India, which are still in the very early days.
So now let's talk a little bit about what would your advice be to, say, a bunch of young entrepreneurs who are starting out. Take yourself back to soon after your Doon School teaching days, when you came and joined your dad, and think about that there are thousands and thousands of people in our country, and with the Prime Minister talking about Startup India and so on. I think there is a lot that entrepreneurs would love to learn from you. So what would your advice be to some of them?
So a couple of things. First is that your college education is not the end of your education. So treat your first and second jobs as part of the education process. What that means is that over-index your decision-making on which company you work with based on the learnings and experiences and not on the money that they will pay. I do find that a lot of youngsters make a decision based on how much they get paid and lose a very valuable opportunity to work with companies which may be paying a little less, but where your learning will be tremendous. So that's the first thing. The second thing I have noticed in youngsters of today, and I have the good fortune of working with some of the brightest, is if they're in a growth company, they do not have patience. So they will get into a role and in 9 months they will expect that they will move on to a different role or get promoted. You are not maturing if you are going to change very rapidly. And in the grand scheme of things, it is better that you develop in each role rather than try and hops, skip and jump very quickly. So I think patience is something which is extremely important.
I see a lot of young people starting businesses because of the valuation.
Right.
What would your thoughts be on that?
One of the things I tell my teams all the time is, assume you're dead and gone. And, you know, you're lying in a casket and people are coming and talking about you. How would you like them to remember you? Whether it is your friends, it is your family. And I know it's difficult to kind of visualize this. But once you have a view of what direction you want to go in, then is your current journey going in that direction?
Okay.
And unfortunately, a lot of people are short-sighted because no one will remember you because you had a big valuation.
Yeah.
But they will remember you for the impact that you created.
Correct.
Valuation may be an outcome of impact. When Jeff Bezos started Amazon, I don't think he was thinking of valuation or even thinks of it today. He thinks of what the impact is. And so I think that is very important. My second learning is that when you start with valuation in mind or wealth creation in mind, you're so focused on short-term decision-making versus what's right for the business that usually that doesn't happen, or it happens because you deploy the wrong means. So if you want to create wealth, focus on creating impact and creating a legacy. Wealth is an outcome.
You know, you've worked with so many private equity investors.
Right.
The primary reason private equity guy invests is to push your valuation.
That's right.
And as an entrepreneur, what you are telling us is that, you know, be driven more by the business than by the valuation.
Right.
How do you handle this conflict with your private equity?
So what we have found, and when I say we, I'm really speaking for the Dutch founders, is that if your company does well, then you can dictate to the investors what your perspective is versus the other way around. Having said that, I think the investors are what allowed you to realize your dreams. So you also have to make certain that they get an adequate return on their investment. So you have to be sensitive to that. But it shouldn't be that, you know, tail is wagging the dog. Mm-hmm. So I think that is important. Mm-hmm. And you have to have that conviction. And it is indeed true that many long-term decisions that you will want to make, your investors will probably index towards the short term. Mm-hmm. But that is where the natural tension is.
Yeah, yeah.
The question is, do you prevail or do you give in?
Correct.
And if you're performing well, you will probably have better leverage in that relationship.
Okay, one last question that I ask everyone I speak to. You know, you've got 24, 25 years of experience. Right. You've got another 15, 20, 30 years of work ahead. What is your learning from the biggest failure? Difficult to think of a biggest failure, but from any failure, say.
I think you have to realize what your weaknesses are and compliment yourself. I, as a person, I'm emotional. I make an emotional connection with people. I like businesses to make an emotional connection with their customers, with their employees and society. If you ask me, that's a strength. Consequently, what I also learned is that because I like this emotional connection, I at times do not take hard decisions when you have someone who's underperforming. And in Dutch, what I realized was in one particular instance, because I did not make a hard decision, I had to let go many hundreds of our employees because finally that customer decided to pull back that business. And it was an extremely, extremely hard learning for me. Because while I did what I thought was right for one person, and I was being soft on that individual, many hundreds of people lost their jobs because of me. And in hindsight, when that person left our organization, went and succeeded somewhere else and did extremely well. So I think the learning for me was that as a leader, you have to take the tough decisions because that's the right thing to do. And you cannot let emotion come in the way. Now, you may soften the impact by assisting people. And I think that was a very hard lesson for me.
Thank you very much, Pawan. Good luck in the Uber journey.
Thank you so
much. Hopefully in a year, year and a half, we'll talk to you again about your Uber story. Too early to talk because you've been there just for a few months.
Right.
But good luck to you, and thank you for being so honest and straightforward. I'm sure all of us will enjoy hearing your interview.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
very
much.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
See you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.